Welcome to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. The 21st century has introduced new norms and resources that are of immense value to businesses and their bottom line. Yet in business, we require relevance and innovation, not just more information. We need the true stories of what works and what does not work. Our program today will tell you what you need to know. The experiences, perspectives, and resources shared by Jen and her guests will make all the difference for you and your business moving forward. Now, here's your host, Jen Sabin.
Hello and welcome. I'm Jen Sabin and this is Moving Forward. And today we have an incredible topic and a really fabulous guest. And we are going to be exploring and discussing the unexpected opportunity. And by the end of our conversation, you will definitely have a renewed relationship to opportunity in terms of your business, whether you're in the early stages of starting your business or you're in a place where you're growing and expanding and it's about profitability, sustainability, and scalability. So for each and every one of us, at some point in our business, whether it's what was the onset of the business, what was the catalyst to the business, or while we're already in business, we come across an unexpected opportunity. It wasn't in the game plan. It wasn't in the business plan. Most likely not even part of the vision or the dream. It's something that shows up. It can be external, or it can be that we recognize a need. And there's that moment where we feel a gravitational pull. So what do we do? How do we handle this? If you're already in business, is this something that is a healthy growth for your business, or are you literally considering starting a different business? You know, how do we distinguish between the recognition of that opportunity that presents itself and whether we see something or we discern that there's something that can make a difference and be monetized or capitalized upon, or we come from there's something that can be capitalized upon and it would make a difference? Either's fine. There's no judgment around that. Whatever is your initial response to it. Yet, you know, where is the place between the due diligence and the belief? And belief is really trusting without the facts. It's our knowing. It's our confidence. It is that piece that isn't necessarily quantifiable, but then is justified by whatever research that we can do. So in that place, you know, what does it take? Is it that we really have recognized an opportunity? And sometimes we feel as if, no, but does anyone else see this? Am I the only one who knows that this is wanted or needed or not being addressed in a quality manner? And sometimes some due diligence will show that we're not the first ones to address it, but maybe we're the ones who will actually do something about it and impact it in a different way. Or sometimes it's not going to be our ride. So how do we get to that place of choice? And also, how do we kind of gird ourselves, you know, to step into that place of the unknown? Well, the unexpected opportunity, kind of the joy and the challenge of each and every one of us who's in business. For our guest today, there were a series of unexpected opportunities, and we're very, very fortunate to have with us today Matt Johnson. Now, we all know people who are essentially born entrepreneurs. It's like blinking. It's not that they went and studied it or cultivated it. It's just part of who they are and what they do and how they see the world. And Matt Johnson, literally by the time he was 16, he had his first business already, maintaining rental properties for local investors. He has owned and operated a number of companies and has a strong background, really, in corporate investigation. So it would make sense, or maybe not, welcome to being an entrepreneur, that when he took his first stand-up paddleboard lesson, and I did say stand-up paddleboard lesson in 2009, from that lesson, from what was ignited in terms of the passion and the experience of it, Supplove Stand-Up Paddleboard was created. And SUPLUP stand-up paddleboard, we're going to hear about the evolution and growth of this stellar company and really leader in terms of quality and inclusiveness in the paddleboard industry, in the stand-up paddleboard industry. Stand-up paddleboard started essentially as a training company providing training, and it was literally Sydney, Australia's first accredited stand-up paddle training company, and it was the first company to be accredited by the Academy of Surf Instructors, and the only company where every trainer is individually accredited by the Academy of Surf Instructors, ASI. So really a high commitment to quality and integrity. And to date, SUPLUP stand-up paddleboard has expanded into manufacturing, being a leader in producing quality boards with a commitment behind it to have every person, regardless of ability, to have the most positive experience with the sport, with this particular sport, which is one of the fastest growing sports. We are so fortunate to have with us today one of the founders and owners of SUPLUP Stand-Up Paddleboards, Matt Johnson. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here with you on Moving Forward.
Thank you so much. And let's rewind the clock to 2009, a stand-up paddleboard lesson, and from it, the creation of what today is, you know, a leader in the stand-up paddleboard world.
That's correct. It was as simple as that. It was a chance meeting. I lived on the northern beaches of Sydney down in Australia, and I'd seen over the past couple of years these guys doing stand-up paddle both in Hawaii and also in Sydney's northern beaches. And one day I was walking along the beach, and I met this guy who had some stand-up paddle boards with him, and I questioned him on them and said, you know, was asking the technicalities of them. What are they? They're bigger than a surfboard, you know. And he was basically ran through and described to me the equipment that he was using, and then told me that that he had a training company where he was providing lessons one out, you know, just him and other people. And would I like to take a lesson and learn the ropes? And so, of course, I saw this as a great opportunity. So I did, purely from a recreational point of view. At the time, I think I was still in corporate investigation, or I was just getting out of it because I'd had enough and it was time to move on. But I was still engaged in other businesses anyhow. So I took the lesson with him and proceeded to get hooked. I had to have a board. That was the next thing. It took less than, I think, with one lesson, and then I just wanted a board because I wanted to go out and practice every day and just increase my skill level. And so that happened from there. And I maintained this great friendship with the trainer, whose name is Stuart Murray, and who is co-founder of SUPLUP and my business partner in the Australian side of the SUPLUP operation still to this day. And we proceeded to build up some training schools. And as you pointed to, we wanted the highest standards of quality instruction, safety, and basically understanding, so that everybody during their first lesson could have a great time no matter what their skill level was. And that's where the initial model of SUPLUP was born, just as a training company in Sydney, Australia, by a chance meeting.
This is absolutely fantastic. So for those who are listening, and when we talk about, you know, look to what you love, that may be your next business opportunity. There's two things, though, that stand out to me. One is, could you explain a little bit for those listeners who might not be aware of what stand-up paddleboard is, you know, that they might be confusing it with surfing or kiteboarding or some other other sport?
I would love to. Stand-up paddle is the origin of it. They say traditionally links back to the Polynesians and the South Pacific Islanders. And then the modern incarnation of the sport, some watermen from Hawaii in the early 2000s began doing it in Maui and also in Malibu, I believe. This is the story that I've been told. And they basically, you know, commenced the sport and it took on very quickly. So the sport can best be described as if you took an oversized surfboard. So something for a beginner would be in the realm of 11 feet. So it's 11 feet, a board that's 11 feet long, about 30 inches wide. It's constructed of similar material to a traditional surfboard. And with that comes a very long paddle. So the paddle blade looks more like an outrigger canoe paddle as opposed to a kayak paddle. And it has a very, very long blade on it so that you grab the handle. So you stand up on the board, you grab the handle by the top, and your other arm grabs the middle of the paddle. You place the paddle in the water to the side of the board and basically pull back with a regular outrigger-style paddle stroke. And so you get propelled along via that paddling method and don't need propulsion of a wave. But for all intents and purposes, it looks like surfing with a paddle, but because the paddle's involved, you don't need a wave to do it. And that is the that was part, which I'm sure we'll get to, that was part of the allure of the sport for me, in it being so globally accessible to everybody.
Yeah, so this is something that does not involve surf and isn't necessarily even part of the surf culture, although it's, if we would make like a big Venn diagram with circles overlapping, that is a component of it. But what always fascinated me about this particular sport is that it could be done on lakes. This isn't about waves, although there are those who gravitate towards that aspect of it. I'm a cross-country skier. I like to be grounded. I'm not an extreme sport person. I'm not about, you know, speed. But so it just struck me the kind of universality in terms of ages, in terms of abilities, in terms of backgrounds. This is such a unique sport in terms of that, or as you said, a recreational activity, not even to put it in the context of a sport, a recreational activity.
That's so true. That's so true. And that is, and the way you describe it is very accurate. The appeal of the sport and the beauty of it is that it is accessible to people of all ages. I mean, I've seen 5-year-olds paddle themselves on stand-up paddle boards. My 7-year-old daughter, she paddles regularly. And the other end of the spectrum, before I left Sydney, we used to train a guy every week who was 82 years of age. Age knows no bounds to this sport. And then you take the younger, like late teen, early 20, up to 50-year-old demographic, then not only can you access nice family activity on flat bodies of water, but if you want to make the sport extreme, you can. People surf big waves on these things. They ride rapids up in Colorado, Montana, in the United States, you know, where there's bodies of white water. They ride these boards. So the possibilities are endless, and that's just something that captured me from the moment, is that it wasn't a traditional surfing sport, albeit that people do paddle surf, including myself. But it has a broader appeal than that. It's an inclusive sport, and hence that was part of the reason for our company motto, which is everyone, everywhere.
Fantastic. And the congruency is so apparent. You know, so we've met Matt for a little bit, and we now, for the listeners to have an understanding of what type of sport and how broad-based it is in its appeal and target market, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to discuss the evolution of SupLove and in terms of the business and kind of that fork in the road where a major decision needed to be made, and how do we make those major decisions in terms of the expansion of a business. So when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Matt Johnson. We're going to go to break now.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
If you're anything like me, you're tired of all the partisan bickering and you just want our leaders to get on with the business of solving our problems. Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report, every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel. Join me each week as I welcome top newsmakers from the left, right, and center for an honest look at our greatest challenges, from government debt and terrorism to energy, education, and election reform. No topic is off limits. That's the Costa Report every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. right here on the Voice America Business Channel.
Tune in for What About Wealth every week to learn the vital answers to your questions about creating wealth, investing it, donating it, and protecting it. Your hosts are Rich Bloomfield and Rick Durfee, who explain the principles that govern wealth in terms you can understand. Building and preserving positive wealth requires correct action, but few people know how wealth really works. Listen every Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and find the answers you need about wealth.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back. We are so fortunate to be speaking with Matt Johnson of Step Love Stand-Up Paddle Boards. And we were discussing the industry and how Matt and those others who were involved came to create Step Love Stand-Up Paddle Boards. So, Matt, initially you had a training and teaching paddleboard company, stand-up paddleboard company. It was a service-based company. What changed? I know what happens, but I'm curious. So what changed for you in the early years?
Sure. So we commenced training and we were training a lot of people. There were a few market forces at play in Australia at the time, because remembering that, you know, back in 2009 when this all commenced, I was living in Australia. I hadn't moved to the United States then. And a few forces were at play. Number one was the availability of equipment. There was not the selection of equipment that there is now. And what that basically did is put a supply and demand market force on these boards. And at the time, we were paying in the vicinity of $2,000 a board in Sydney, Australia, which is just, when you know what goes into the construction of a board, it just, and these particular boards we were using, was just a ludicrous amount. You know, someone was making a lot of money just because of the supply and demand factor. So that was the first thing that where we saw a need. The second thing was the equipment that we were using and paying large amounts of money for. There were problems with construction. There was rail chipping. When you hit the rail with a paddle, the colour would come off, and the boards were not particularly robust. They didn't have handles in them. They were very early incarnations of design. So big, heavy boards. They weighed a lot. They easily got damaged and were difficult to transport around. So that was part of the thing. Also then, we had students at the school who decided that they wanted to buy their own equipment. So we were reselling another brand at the time, or some other brands at the time. And again, there wasn't, we weren't that enamored with the equipment that made us proud to back it and sell it as such. So with that in mind, we decided that we should look at private labeling our own board, getting someone to make boards for us in Southeast Asia. And they were really the catalyst. It was working in the business and just seeing that the products we were using could be done better, but not being able to buy those on the market at the time.
So there's this place where you have a kind of a quality control issue, and there's an integrity piece, because this is what your your students are experiencing that you're providing them. So it's, there's this kind of awkward dynamic because it is your company that is using these, and this is their experience of those. And then even in terms of those who wanted to get their own, as it sounded you did after your first stand-up paddleboard lesson, like you are off to the races in terms of, you know, wanting to practice and do more.
Correct.
So in that's a big jump to go from a service-based industry to now being involved in the in a proprietary manufacturing. So were you looking for to find someone to manufacture, or were you and purchase it from them?
Yes.
Or were you looking? Okay, so go ahead, please.
We were. Yeah, that was going to be simple. It was a case of I'll visit a few factories in Southeast Asia. I'll pick the best one, and we'll get some boards made. So for me at the time, I didn't really see it as a major deviation from the service industry. It's just a transaction. It's just another business transaction is how I looked at it. So we went and did that, did some tours, saw some factories and so on and so forth. And I met with some connections that I had in various parts of Southeast Asia. And what became apparent or what struck me in my conscience was that where we were choosing to get our boards made were some of the same locations where the boards were being manufactured that we're not happy with. So, again, it comes down to the integrity and doing the right thing by your customers, which is, always integral to my thought process, in that I would just be perpetuating that bad quality of construction, features that I'm not happy with, but it would have my label on it, which in ways is even worse. It would have our Supplove brand on it, which is even worse than being able to pass the blame onto someone else's brand.
So what happened?
So while I was over there, an opportunity presented with someone whom I knew to be able to start our own manufacturing plant. And at the time, as I expressed, I was in between careers, essentially. I'd done corporate investigation. I'm pretty sure I was out of it at the time. I had been out completely, but if not, I was very soon thereafter out of it. And this opportunity presented itself to start our own manufacturing plant and to build it and build it up as a business. And I saw the opportunity there because I'd learned a bit at the time about construction techniques, construction of stand-up paddle boards or albeit, epoxy surfboards. And I saw a way that we could do this and using higher quality materials that we could control. We know what goes into our boards, and there's very few, if any, competitors who manufacture offshore who can claim the same thing. Knowing what goes into it, I knew we could build a better quality product, and which we certainly did. And so it was that opportunity presenting itself. And I remember thinking about it and really thinking, is this what I want to do? Do I want to spend? Because I kind of knew that it would mean that, over the course of the next year, I would be spending at least 6 months away from my family, getting things set up and ensuring things are done right. And so it was that conundrum as well. I had a 4-year-old daughter, or a 4.5-year-old daughter, and a newborn at the time. Like, she was literally 3 months old, and I thought, do I really want to spend my next 6 months away from my family? Because that's why part of the reason why I had got out of corporate investigation too was to spend more time with them. And I thought, it's going to be a huge sacrifice and commitment, but at the end of the day, here is a great opportunity that may well be worth those sacrifices now for the rewards that it will bring in a family context further down the track.
It's trite, but there's a truth to it in terms of you do what you have to do when you have to do it, so you could do what you want to do when you want to do it.
That's so true. I mean, there is nothing, nothing worthwhile has ever been achieved without sacrifice.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, if Ayn Rand describes in one of her books in a great way, sacrifice is that it's something. It's something more important at the expense of something else. So if you go without food, for example, so that your child has food, it's not necessarily a sacrifice if it's more important to you that your child has food, but here is something that was such a core commitment. And so many business owners, this is a crossroads. This is a struggle. This is those kind of behind the doors. This has nothing to do with the taxes, with the import exports, with the manufacturing, with the goods. This is, you know, that piece in your life where you and your family are making decisions about what it looks like and what, where it's worth making certain investments.
That's so true. That's so true. And on the basis of that, when I've done a lot of due diligence over there, and over in Southeast Asia, and we found a location for the factory and so forth, I got on the phone and I called my wife at the time and said, you know, this is the opportunity that we've been presented with. And being entrepreneurs, you know, we're always looking for something else. Because obviously I was in, as I said, I was in between careers. So we were looking for the next new thing, but again, not trying to force that. Because just when it comes, it comes. And I said to her, you know, this is what the commitment is, like as far as and the time commitment, you know, more than anything else. And she said, let's do it, you know. So what's fundamentally important to me as an entrepreneur is having the support of my family in that regard. If she'd have had a moment of hesitation, then I wouldn't be sitting here speaking with you today about self-love. I would be speaking with you about something else. But if she'd have had any doubt in either our ability to pull this off, you know, such a vertically integrated business, which it is internationally, or, you know, having two young kids that apart from working full-time, she's also, you know, taking care of while I was building the factory and setting things up overseas. If there was a moment of hesitation, it wouldn't have happened, because at the end of the day, you know, you only get one shot with your family. So it's just not worth it. But when you're a united team and you all pull together, the rewards are just sensational. I've certainly found that anyhow on many levels.
Yeah, it's interesting because not once, every sentence you used had the word we, and it was never I or you. It was we, and it's also important to mention, my understanding is your wife is also your business partner. So when you mentioned working full time, it's SupLove that the two of you co-founded it with your Australian counterpart.
Yes.
Okay, yes. We're going to be going to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking a bit more about some of the surprises in terms of manufacturing and what it takes in an emerging industry, and because that's what this stand-up paddleboard industry is. It's relatively new and it's growing and exponentially. How do you maintain your brand and stay true to something while you're expanding and going global? So we're going to come back and talk some more with Matt Johnson. We're going to break now.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. Do you, like most Americans, spend the majority of your life at work? Are you making it the joy that it deserves to be, or are you feeling drained and unfocused? Tune in to A Great Place to Work with hosts Kurt Kaufman and Dr. Kathy Sorensen. Your hosts have more than 30 years of experience in workplace consulting and are ready to bring you the secrets and success stories of businesses who are making their business a great place to work. Listen every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel and enjoy a better workplace and a better life. Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in.
Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you'd prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. We're speaking with Matt Johnson of SupLove Stand-Up Paddleboards today, and we were just, prior to the last break, talking about some of the influencing factors and criteria and discernment needed to move forward on an opportunity as it shows up. And so there was this piece that support and acknowledgement that this makes sense, it's valid, it's viable, we have the pieces in place. There's another piece, though, because in a small company, in its early stages, Matt, you're now taking part of not just the quote-unquote management team, but one of the key people in the organization, and you're putting that resource towards something else. So now you're involved in, you know, you're there looking at the manufacturing plants, et cetera, but there's the day-to-day operations. There's still the revenue streams and the expansion of what is the core business. So how did this impact the training and the primary business at that point of SupLove?
It was a huge impact. I mean, you know, essentially there were two of us working the Australian side of the business, insofar as lessons and training people, and then all of a sudden one person was taken out of the mix and moved to the United States, you know, to further the manufacturing side of the business. There was definitely an impact on the Australian business, which is where it's important when you're going to, you know, make decisions in that regard. You have to have good people in your corner. You know, like our business partner, Stuart Murray, is in Australia. He, you know, he picked up where I left off when it comes to the lessons, training, and organisation, and, you know, still runs that very, very successfully today. And that's where I'm sure all entrepreneurs know, and those aspiring entrepreneurs really should know, is that the key is people. The key is having the right people in your corner. And when you're a young and emerging company, it's often a struggle because, you know, startup companies don't necessarily have huge amounts of cash to throw at, you know, CEOs, CFOs, in, you know, for tens of or hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of salary. So it's important to have the right mix, identify the right people, and choose people based on a good personality fit. Like, will they work well with you based on what your personality is like? Do you believe? Nothing in this world is certain, of course. And, you know, do they have the necessary skills? That's an obvious one. But I think that flexibility, and it is, especially in the modern corporate world, the personality and the flexibility and what that person is willing to do for the company and for themselves with a view to the future is often, for an entrepreneur, much more important than necessarily what their education is and what their prior work experience is and who's got the best resume or CV. It's finding the key people who are willing, who share your vision, basically, who are on board for your vision, not just for immediate financial gain.
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about, you know, a willingness to be engaged, to be part of growing something. And that's not for everyone in terms of culture, in terms of style, even if they have, as you mentioned, the skill base. So there's a kind of a unique dynamic that works really well. And for many, you know, we're talking about unexpected opportunities, and sometimes the unexpected opportunity isn't one that should be leveraged, you know, that it can, you know, that there's that place where you choose, because there's always for an entrepreneur a gravitational pull. There's always that, wow, that's interesting, or that could make sense, and they'll figure a way out, but it does, it's not always a good fit. So here you are, you've just kind of 50% of, you know, half the team is now engaged in a major project, if I could even use that term, in terms of an expansion of the business and essentially a new aspect of the business that's going to need a whole entire set of energy, capital, resources, attention.
Yes.
And you're expanding, you're going global at the same time. So there's those cultural dynamics and the introduction into new markets and new consumer cultures.
Yes, definitely.
So what was the biggest surprise with all of this?
The biggest surprise in the move and in the expansion, I think we'd always kept our options open insofar as how we were going to do this. I always envisioned that I wanted a very, I used this term before, a vertically integrated company. So I want to be involved in everything from the manufacture right through to select distribution. I mean, you just, when you're capitalized like we are, you cannot choose to go to every country in the world and do your own distribution. But there are select companies, the United States being one of them, that I wanted to, you know, handle the distribution for there in Australia. And so the biggest challenge, besides the human resources, is just finding out how far you want to take. Well, for me, it was finding out how far I wanted to take that vertical integration. Did I really want to do the distribution myself, or did I want to find a distributor and hand that off and concentrate more on the manufacturing? And that was a huge decision. And that was one that was made, that's one that was, is not being assessed anymore, but it was always constantly being assessed. Should we continue to do our, you know, develop our own sales channels, or should we leverage someone's existing sales channel in the United States? The ultimate decision came down to, have we met anybody who we trust to represent our brand to the retailer and consumer the way that we do? And we hadn't found anybody who fit that bill. So hence we just, it was a matter of, yes, it was a choice, because you can always choose one way or the other, but it was also a matter of necessity. There was no one we could find who really fit what we wanted, insofar as that, and maintaining the culture of SupLove and what we had developed, and what is, you know, the values, the core values that are really important to us. Those people are out there, but we just never found them. So we just continued developing our own distribution channels ourselves.
This is really interesting, and it's another crossroads that so many, and I'm going to use the word small businesses and even larger businesses come to, but certainly in terms of an entrepreneurial start. And it's where to outsource, where to delegate, what goes into making that decision, is it the right decision, what is my bandwidth? It seems as though, and this is from my experience and the work I've done, that in the earlier stages, certainly those who created it are the best at articulating the vision, the experience, the quality, that the passion resonates, that there's a commitment there that you can't really tap into from any other source. And yet, as there is this maturation, a lot of what is just kind of felt is now put into language, is now, it can be transferred. And there's a place where there is that opportunity. So would it be fair to say that this is something that is available, that is, could be the next step for SupLove in terms of increasing your bandwidth?
Possibly. I mean, that is always the case. Look, one thing that I have, as an entrepreneur, I have struggled with traditionally from the time I was 16, I'm now 38. It's always been a constant struggle, is one of my coworkers once described as the bottleneck approach. You know, as an entrepreneur, you have an unwaverable self-belief, because if you didn't, you wouldn't be able to undergo the adversities that get you to the point of success. So that unwavering belief, you know, everyone has, and that can also cause a bottleneck in that as an entrepreneur, sometimes you don't feel that, you feel that you have to do everything yourself in order for it to be done right. So you're definitely right in, you know, how much bandwidth do I have? Where am I going to put my energies? And of the quorum of people who I have around me, where are they best suited to put their energies? You know, that's, I mean, it sounds very much like a function if you were talking corporate of a human resources department. But from a, you know, from a growing entrepreneurial point of view, you know, business point of view, it's just a case of, you know, who do I trust and who do I know can get the job done in select areas? And where does that leave me free to shine? Or what tasks are the most important? What can I let, although it's a bad thing to say, what can I let slip through the cracks that isn't going to be detrimental, you know, to the business? Always entrepreneurs, you know, doing startups, self-funded startups in particular, are always looking at those things and assessing those things. You just have to, because you cannot do everything. And yeah, you really want to avoid the bottleneck, because it just slows everything down.
More than that, it certainly slows things down, but it creates an atrophy and a stagnation, and it's not even recognized until you're on the other side of it.
That's true.
Being on the other side of it is not being in a healthy place in terms of missed opportunities. Like, there's that next kind of exponential leap that can't happen, because now there is often an absence of infrastructure and systems in place. And that's not to make this all formal and, you know, take away any of the passion or the commitment or the vision, but it really is about making sure the business of the business you're in is healthy.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You have to, you know, without a healthy bottom line, especially in tough economies, you know, businesses are not going to last. So you really have to develop a plan, stick with that plan, have the key people whom you can afford to execute that with you, and yeah, definitely do not take your eye off the ball, because you need to have the business practices in place in order to be able to grow any company. There's no two ways about it. You can only have a large company and run it as a sole trader for so long.
Mm. So when we come back, we're going to explore a little bit about what it's like to operate in multiple countries and kind of the consumer dynamics. And also, again, in this emerging industry, which is one of the fastest growing activities or sports right now in our kind of contemporary society, is how do you stay true to your brand and manage kind of the exponential growth? When we come back, we'll be continuing to speak with Matt Johnson of SupLove Stand Up Paddle Boards. Oh, we're going to go to a break now.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Leadership is a vital skill set in today's competitive global economy. Being a leader is not enough. To succeed, you must optimize your performance and know how to imbue others in your organization with leadership skills. Practical, actionable leadership insights are the focus of Leadership Development News, hosted each Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, by Kathy Greenberg and Relly Nadler on the Voice America Business Channel. Doctors Greenberg and Nadler, who coach global leaders on how to be most effective, will share their insights and contacts. The path to leadership excellence begins here.
Is your business model robust enough? In today's ever-changing business environment, people are working to transform themselves, their futures, and their business. Tune in to Business Reinvention with your host, Nancy Lynn. To stay ahead of the game in business, you have to constantly reinvent yourself and your organization. With Nancy's experience and that of her guest experts, you'll learn from stories of inspiration, innovation, and forward thinking. Listen for Business Reinvention live every Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Moving Forward with Jen Sabin. We'd love to hear from you today. Please call in to our program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. If you prefer, send an email to Jen Sabin at jensabin.com. And remember, that's two N's in Jen. Now, back to Moving Forward.
Hello, welcome back. And we're speaking with Matt Johnson of SupLove Stand-Up Paddle Boards. And I just want to present something before we go back to speaking with you, Matt. And that is, in less than 44 months, you've taken a stand-up paddleboard lesson, decided that from your passion of it, you wanted to start a company in partnership with your wife and one other gentleman in Australia, to train and teach and really put into place the highest quality standards and the highest credentialing for those who are teaching and training. You recognized a need for a quality board in terms of what you were experiencing through your teaching and training. So you went into manufacturing and from that exploration and due diligence wound up self-manufacturing. And not only that, at the same time, you expanded to different continents with a family and young children. So let's just talk a bit about kind of the expansion of branching out of Australia as the primary marketplace for what you were doing.
Yes.
What informed that decision?
It was really a question of that side of it was a question of numbers. It was, you know, here I am, I purchased a factory. We've now got a manufacturing capability, and the population of Australia is 22 million people, and that alone will not really support, a manufacturing enterprise. So with a case of necessity, we could have just gone the straight out distributor route. But again, there's also, with the spirit of myself and my wife, the spirit of adventure there. You know, so it was a case of, well, let's take this opportunity and see what we can do in another country. And United States was a very, very simple choice for us because the culture is very similar. We ended up moving to Southern California specifically because we had friends here, and so we had a little support network when we arrived. And, the stories like they let us, for the first 6 months we were here, we slept on their living room floor. You know, it's all those sacrifices that people make to get where they are. So we're Southern California because of the support network. Also, the culture is very similar to Australia. So as far as really putting it out there, it's not a huge jump culturally. It would be a lot harder going to Europe, I would imagine. But it still is different. And, you know, ensuring that you fit in with the community and with the culture is really important, not just from a business point of view, because you can always find, if you wanted to be mercenary about it, you could always find that distributor and sell your product. But socially, you know, and for the social well-being of a family, it's important that you fit in.
You know, and it's interesting because there's this theme that is reoccurring And it's unique also to the stand-up paddleboard sport and community, and certainly what you're cultivating. And this is more than branding. If I were to describe branding, I would say it's a consistent experience by the consumer of a product or a service or an enterprise, a business, whatever, a consistent experience. And everything you've done or said throughout the years, it unwaveringly has been very much about community and being connected and family and taking care of people. And in terms of what even led you to manufacture the boards, how you approach the training company, and even in terms of having the largest, I believe, SUP community in the world on Facebook.
Yeah, that's right. Almost 25,000 active Facebook fans on our page. And I think Jen, and you're right, what you pointed out is correct, and there is a recurring theme. And what it put simply and concisely, it's just genuineness. You know, we went into this business because we had a belief, and our public persona that we put forward is who we are. So when you meet us as a family, as people, you see the company values in us and vice versa. You see our values in the company because it is just a reflection of who we are. I've always found through my experience in business, and I've had a failure with one of these, is that brands don't work when they're not true to who the person is who is setting the direction. So let's just call it the owner. In the case of a small business, if a brand isn't true to who the owner is and the way the owner treats people around them in life, it's ultimately, you're not going to be highly successful, I don't believe.
Well, there's an incongruity, and let's face it, the public, we smell it when there's something off. There might be some initial sales, but it won't be sustainable. We know that, and it doesn't work. There's an incongruity that is not palatable to the public,
right.
And most likely it's not it's attracting a particular consumer or target market that, you know, it's prudent. And that what makes for a good, strong, solid brand. And here you are staying true and authentic to something that is kind of an authentic self-expression, as you said, genuine. In an industry that's exploding when it would be so easy to choose a different path.
It would be. We see it every day with, several people within our industry. We don't really look at them as competitors because there's a different business model going on. But there are people within the stand-up paddle industry who are simply in it for short-term financial gain. And what that does, and this is something that also a lesson for budding entrepreneurs, what that does is obviously depletes from the sport and the overall base. If you can network and align yourself with other brands who are your competitors, but if you can keep a good dialogue and work together to build a strong industry through industry associations, events, things that you work at together and put the industry first with best foot forward, then that is something that I would definitely recommend. I'm very much in contact with many of our competitors here. We have a great, although we're in direct competition, we have a great working relationship for the benefit of building the sport, because the more people who get a positive experience and come to the sport, the more they're going to tell their friends, the bigger our consumer base will grow, the more people are engaged in that sport, and the more that we will all profit. So it's not, it's very short-sighted looking at it from, a mercenary point of view and how can I make a sale just for today?
Well, it becomes a transaction rather than something that is an industry giant, so to speak. It's transactional, and all consumers have had the experience of those transactional sales versus brand loyalty, being an advocate. And from what I understand, the majority of the earth is covered in water, and there's over 7 billion people, so there's quite a large potential marketplace.
There is.
In terms of stand-up paddleboard. Well, Matt, you've given a lot of great insight and tips, and it seems that at every stage there is this unexpected opportunity that you had to, one, trust yourselves and also use that discernment and due diligence. So you're looking at it and also the confidence of being in it. If you were to give a gift to someone starting out in their own business, whether it's in your industry or another industry? If you could give them one gift, what would it be?
That one gift would be find a mentor. Find someone who has done it, even if, because many entrepreneurs, you know, aren't necessarily university educated. And find yourself a mentor, someone who's been there, done that. Entrepreneurs are usually really generous with their time, and there's nothing more that an entrepreneur likes than helping the next generation of entrepreneur come through and be able to give them information regarding pitfalls that have already been made. You know, don't try and relearn something that's already from a mistake when that mistake's already been made, and you can learn it from somebody who's been there and done that. So my gift would be for, the advice, find a mentor.
Outstanding. Yeah, and just to build on that, you know, you're going to make enough mistakes of your own, so if there's some that you could avoid or dodge because someone else has made it before and is willing to share it, so you can make an informed choice, at least, make an informed choice, you know, absolutely a gift. And so for everyone, if you want to know more about SupLove, it's www.suplove.com. That's SUPLOVE.com. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes, it is, Jen.
Okay. And you could also find them on Facebook as well. Matt Johnson, thank you so much for spending time with us today and for everyone else for this week. Raise your awareness around the unexpected opportunity. What have you been stepping over, and where is it right in front of you that it's maybe time to capitalize upon? Make this week a moving forward week, and I look forward to being with you again next week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you again for tuning in to Moving Forward. Please join Jen Saban again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Make your week a Moving Forward week.